is going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had a chance to hang out with Kalpi over Zoom video. Kalpi was born and raised in Trinidad and talks about how he got into music. He grew up on Carnival and Calypso music. His dad was even a songwriter to a certain extent. Music was a huge part of the high school he went to. His dad was a teacher at the high school, and they would write songs about Save the Turtles type songs like that. So I thought that was super interesting. But he found at a very early age that he was an incredible singer. A nun sat down, would play piano, and they would do scales, and he was able to hit the scales. So they're like, okay, Kalpi, you are the singer for your class. And towards the end of high school, he got himself the guitarist that was classically trained, the bass player that was classically trained, and they started a band together. He tells us about that. We learn about writing the song No One, which was turned down by everyone. They thought, this is not the song. What are you doing here? He made a lyric video, put it up on YouTube, and ends up gaining like 7 million plays. It attracts the attention of Sony Music. He ends up signing to a major label, goes out to Sweden, writes some more songs, tells us all about that, all the new music he has coming up. And we learn all about this new kind of genre of music that they put together called New Calypso. And we learn all about how he created the very first Calypso stage at South by Southwest. You can watch our interview with Kalpi on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It would be awesome if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, it'd be great if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Kalpi. Hey, what's up, Kalpi? How are you, man?
All good, bro. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you. No worries. I appreciate your time.
Sorry to make you move around the
world.
You're good. To do the video. But it's great to see your face, aside from just hearing your voice. I'm Adam, and this podcast is about you, your journey in music. We'll talk about the latest song you have out. I want to talk to you about the stage at South by Southwest and all that stuff. But that's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Killer, man. Awesome. Well, talk to me. Where were you born and raised? Were you born and raised in Trinidad, Tobago?
Yes, so I've lived in Trinidad, gone to school in Trinidad all my life. I'm still kind of based there, if I'm being honest with you, back and forth between the UK, LA, and Trinidad, and then now Barbados. So I'm currently in Barbados at the moment, yeah. So you could probably hear the waves in the background a little
bit. That's killer, man. How's Barbados?
I love Barbados, bro. Barbados is one of the most beautiful islands in the Caribbean, hands down. They're all beautiful, but this place is just special. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. Well, yeah, so what was it like growing up in Trinidad? How is that?
So, I mean, Trinidad is incredible as well. We're known for calypso music. So in terms of creativity and music side of stuff, I've been singing calypso since the age of 6. They've ingrained carnival and calypso and soca into schooling. So from primary school, go all the way up, it's part of your teaching, So that's how I kind of started in music, to be fair, doing calypso music. My dad would like write all my songs for me. And then I'd go like represent my school, represent my class, So
you said your dad would write your songs for you?
Yeah. My dad would write. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get into that too. I'm curious. Okay. So your dad would write these songs. Go ahead. Perform at school.
Yeah. So, music has just been such a big part of my life ever since. And I think music is a big part of Trinidad in general, as of recently, we've been trying to like push the boundaries. I might be skipping ahead a little bit, so let me know.
No. Okay, go ahead. Cool. This is awesome. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. But we've been trying to like push the boundaries as to what Trinbagonian artists are allowed to make as a Trini artist. You get what I mean? Because for me, I always felt as though I had to make music that was associated with carnival, which I love carnival. I appreciate what it's done and appreciate its importance. But when it comes to individuals making music, sometimes if you bring that box of a genre around artists, they can't really express themselves the way that they want to. or like, right. you know what I mean? Like they actually want to. And I'm now like over the past 5 years since I've like learned to produce and learned to do a bunch of the creative process for myself is when I started realizing, you know, I actually want to be able to merge genres. I want to be able to look this way, do this, speak about these types of things because it wasn't always like that. And I think that's from me drawing from the Calypso background, being very political, being very serious music, because that's what Calypso is all about. It was about like, again, politics. It was about the crime rate of the country, which in Trinidad, it was quite high and it still is quite high. So that's something that I try to implement back into my music. Now, I wanted to feel trendy, but I wanted to have a hopeful message behind it, a positive message, because it's important to me. You know, mm-hmm. I see how that can influence somebody's day, hearing a positive song, hearing a positive word or phrase, sorry. You know, it really can give people motivation towards their own goals and dreams or whatever you want to call it, you know? So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And is that what the new Calypso is? Is that where that genre kind of spins out of or that?
Yes.
That...
Yeah, actually. So new Calypso is the modern form for new age Trinbegonian artists to express themselves without, because the thing is, okay, so new Calypso, we didn't want to call it Calypso because Calypso is a song.
Already. Yeah.
You
sure.
get what I mean? You know, naturally. So that's a song, but at the same time, there are so many elements that myself, they have other artists like Freetown Collective, Jimmy October, you know, all of these artists, we use a lot of influences from it in terms of like the rhythm, the cadence and what we're singing, the message, whatever it might be. Even like brass instruments or steel pan, all of these things, you know. But now I am now, so my version of New Calypso is adding in rock music, trap music, dancehall, you know? Yeah, so that's why we call it New Calypso, to give us a new expression of our root music, which is Calypso music.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And so you, obviously you weren't the only artist doing that. Were you finding other artists and hearing about other artists that were kind of, were doing a similar thing when it came to breaking out of the box of a regular, you know, Calypso music into this New Calypso?
Yeah, so, I mean, Trinidad is quite small. So the creative community, we know each other. You know what I mean? Okay. We know all of the producers. We work in teams. So like myself, Tano, who's an amazing producer from Trinidad, and Jimmy October, again, Freetown Collective. These are all guys who have been trying to make their own version of Calypso music, but we just couldn't call it Calypso. They wouldn't allow us to call it Calypso. So this is a recent change, and it's actually big up to Jimmy, because Jimmy is the one who actually called it New Calypso first. And it was just such a catchy word. Like we thought it was trendy. We thought it was cool.
Yeah, so sure.
You know, we all adopted, you know, as a freedom to be able to express as youthful Caribbean Trini acts. Yeah, and just do our own thing. It don't have to sound like Calypso. It don't have to be about partying. We could just be whatever we want. And that's something we just want to, kind of put that out into the universe so that other Caribbean artists feel like they could just do them, because that's not the case. You know, we really sometimes could be put in a box, and it does affect our mental, you know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if you can't
really express.
Right. I was going to say, if you can't express how you want your sound to be, or you want this certain thing to be, and you're told, no, you can't escape this. You can't go outside of this.
Exactly.
That could be, it's super difficult.
Frustrating. Yeah. Yeah.
Frustrating. I like that. Yeah, definitely. Well, just to back up real quick. Dad wrote songs for you. So you come from a musical household, it sounds like.
So actually my dad is the only one in my family that might be a little musical, and he's not the most musical person, but he used to write. So he wrote songs for like Marshall Montano when he was a lot younger. He was a teacher as well. So myself, Marshall Montano, Kes Diffentala, we all went to the same school, right? And the school actually was a very musical school. I actually went to that school in particular, which is Presentation College, San Fernando, which is my secondary school or college. And it's a very musical school. They were all always about choir and music festival and calypso competitions. So everybody coming from there had to go into choir. And that's one of the reasons why my dad actually put me into that school. So while he was teaching at the college, he would work with Marshall on songs about the environment because my dad is an environmentalist. And yeah, so we spoke about
That makes sense. So he could have like an influence on the direction or the message of the song, but not necessarily be a musician
artist, whatever you want to phrase it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so like he was writing songs like Save the Turtles and I can't remember, there are a couple other ones that he wrote with Marshall, but I'm talking about ballads that I think were important songs because we had issues with people capturing and killing turtles for meat and for their shells, and they became endangered species like the leatherback turtle in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so those things kind of brought awareness, but it wasn't really appreciated because it wasn't as fun as we always right. want music to be, right? Mm-hmm. So even those things, like now, as I'm in adulthood, for lack of a better word, those things kind of resonated with me. You know, I'm like, you know, I want to feel fulfilled when I do music. So I want to continue this where I speak about my challenges in life. I speak about things that inspire me in life. Or if it is a challenge I'm writing about, I want to flip it in a way where it becomes hopeful. You know, it's not only about the negative time, it's about now finding a way to flip that hard time and make it a blessing, because it always is a blessing in my eyes. You know, we go through some really challenging things, and most of the time that's where we learn everything. Mm-hmm. So I like to write about that, and I like to flip it for people so that they can now take that positivity from it and apply it to themselves, you know, however they want.
I love that. That's such a great way of thinking and a great way of life. Yeah, I like that. Just to back up. So how did you get into music? Like Calypso music was just a part of your life. It sounds like, is this just something that is a part of everyone's lives in Trinidad and Tobago? Is that like,
so how it kind of works, or how I remember it working, because literally like, so I went to this primary school, it was a private primary school run by nuns, right?
Okay.
So all of these, you know, there were nuns who could play piano, there were nuns who like did different things. It's quite cool, to be fair.
That is really cool.
You know, I can't imagine interesting.
I grew up Catholic. I can't imagine a nun just like sitting on a piano.
Yeah, yeah.
My mind.
So it was really interesting, you know? But like I remember when I now joined that school, they had like this session where all of these, again, I was six at the time, right? So okay. I knew nothing about what I wanted to do in life or anything. But there was this one nun named Sister Anne-Marie, who could play the piano. And she had all of these students, all of the girls and the guys, literally singing to whatever, I think it might be scales or whatever she was having us sing. And that's how she gauged who could sing and who they needed to push. Yeah, so like they were onto something, you know, because I never really did that as in detail as what they did in primary school. So that's how they actually just took me and they were like, yeah, well, you're going to represent your class in Calypso competitions. You're going to actually sing for music festival. You're going to be in the choir. I didn't really want to be in any of those things.
So they just kind of she sits down and plays a scale and goes, okay, you go da, 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 da. And then.
Exactly.
Listen
to tone of voice, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Calvi can sing. So he's going to be the singer, the face of us when in competitions and this and the other thing. That's interesting.
Yeah. But for my class. So every class had like a representative. And then of course, like sometimes they would change me out for another students because they didn't want it to be one person. Right. Mm-hmm. But because I did that for so long, I was being trained naturally. I didn't even realize it at the time, but like I was doing classical training for voice and also playing the steel pan in bass. And you know what I mean? All these things that I didn't really care to do, but now I'm drawing from that experience and like using it in my production and
grateful
trying to find
for
ways,
it,
you know?
Sure. Yeah,
yeah. So grateful for it. So that went straight into secondary school. Same setup again. Having a music teacher there who is super passionate named Miss Lee Mack. And she taught again Marshall, Kess, myself, my dad. She's a legend in that school, you know. Everybody who did music knows that lady. And again, like they classically trained me. So I became a vocalist, representing my school more so in music festival than anything else. And yeah, man, like then after that point is when I kind of realized, oh, wait, well, I love to sing. I love music. I didn't produce anything at the time. I played no instruments, but I love to sing. So we formed a band. So I formed a band with like these guys from the choir who played You know, they just played. Yeah, yeah. You know, there was a guy named Floyd who was classically trained in guitar. And again, same thing, same kind of story. He didn't really care to be a guitarist, like classically trained and stuff. But that knowledge. So you have this classically trained singer, this classically trained guitarist. The bassist was classically trained.
All of us were like, super group. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right?
We just know the one thing we did not have were the tools. So you get what I mean? Like, we didn't have the knowledge behind making music, recording ourselves, having the right
writing your own
guitars.
Songs, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't know that knowledge yet. But we were just making music, as in like doing cover music, playing for the school bazaar, you know, doing anything we wanted, weddings, graduations. We did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really my intro into arrangement, production, me being able to play the guitar, you know? Yeah. So that was my developmental stage. School.
Okay. School. Wow. And then when do you start writing? When does it become, okay, I don't want to do the covers anymore. Right. And let's write. I'm going to write my own song and kind of see what happens.
Yeah. So I think there are two like phases where that started, but I started getting into soca music, right? Which is Trinidad's biggest genre, I'd say. And it never really felt as though it was natural to me, right? Because I was a singer, and soca music is really like energetic. It's really vibey. And it's almost like you had to sound a certain type of way. So I would sing all these songs, again, covers of big artists, Kes, Marshall, all the big artists. And people will always be like, you're singing too proper. You know, your accent is too proper. I'm singing, and it doesn't match. So it was kind of like frustrating, because this is the only thing that I see as an avenue for music. That's my only option. There's no other space for any other genre of music. So I had to do that, right? And
was that just because that was all you were learning or all you were listening to? Or
I mean, don't get me wrong. There were definitely other like bands and stuff doing rock music. There was a band called Orange Sky who did rock and who had real cool opportunities outside of Trinidad. But it's just that there was no space within the country, because the country focused only on carnival. So it's trippy for Trinidad, right? And even places like Barbados. Jamaica is very different. They have a different model because of Bob Marley and stuff and reggae music, right? But
I just interviewed a guy right before you in Jamaica.
Okay.
Like
see,
earlier
what's
this morning.
His name, by the way?
It was, oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Give me half a second here. Harrison Clark. Oh man, hold on. How did I just already forget the guy's name? Hezron Clark.
That sounds familiar. I'm not sure if I know him, but I feel like I've played that name before. Yeah. But
I just you're good.
I know.
Hours ago though.
You have a lot on your mind, bro. This is a cool job, you know what I mean? Like I get
and,
it,
and I'm only focusing on what you've got going.
There we go.
Already forgot what he's doing.
I appreciate you. There we go. But yeah, so this is something that is still the case, but it's a lot better now because of like the way the internet has and technology has transformed the way we create, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there just was no space in Trinidad, and the people did not really appreciate other genres of music.
So you couldn't start a band and go out and play anywhere because no one would go or care. Or
unless
you're
doing exactly, unless you were doing like soca. If you were doing soca and calypso, you had a space. You could open for the bigger artists. The bigger artists would tour constantly throughout the year. But it's weird because we had a system where, for the entire year, there would be no music creation from our artist. But then from like around end of September into February, that's when all the music would happen. So everybody would now create like 10 songs to now put out for carnival. And then after carnival was done, it's done. The music industry shut down. And then you have to wait for the next cycle of carnival. Again, they make a bunch of new songs. And it was very interesting. Also, to add to that, the music, it was led by competition, right? So every part of carnival, as in the music side, the parade of the bands, the steel pan, everything had a competition factor to it. So me as an artist, I could put my music up and go win $2 million if the crowd liked it. And that kind of started funding artists. So like a guy like Marshall Montano, for example, he's won that competition 6-7 times throughout his career. You know, okay, so yeah, it kind of, you know, it kind of like solidified those artists as the ones that could now invest in themselves, invest in studios, invest in gear. And then other artists now had to find other ways to create music. So me now, I actually worked with another, the same Tano, who's that producer, who's my boy, uh-huh, right? Well, I'm going to see in a bit in Trinidad to work with. But Tano was also an artist who was doing soca, because what choice do we have?
Right.
Right. And we connected based on that when we stopped doing soca music. So we opened for the same band and everything. And then he started producing, getting into production. I started doing songwriting, learning guitar. And we randomly met years later. He told me what he was doing. And I told him what I was doing. We met and we made a song called No One. And we had a manager who's the same manager at the time. We went to the manager and we played songs for them. And they did not like it. They didn't think it would work. You know, yeah, they were like, this song's like everything else, blah, blah, blah. And it really, really demotivated us because we thought we were onto something. It was like, if you listen to no one was like, say,
it turns out later that you were onto something, but it's sorry.
Yeah. But it's like, it's so crazy how belief system is literally everything. We could have listened to them and we could have just been like, you know what? Okay, let's try again. But after that meeting, we got motivation from that rejection and we decided, you know what, bro? I'm going to learn to do lyric videos because I didn't have a camera at the time. I knew nothing about videography at the time. We recorded the song properly. We did the vocals properly. I learned to do lyric videos literally on YouTube. And I made a lyric video for this song and we put it out independently. And this thing just worked. You know, Sony came on board. They loved the song. Wow. We shot another video. I learned to now edit music videos because of, so all of these things naturally came because what choice did we have? We had to learn these crafts because there was no other option. If we wanted to be successful in music, we had to learn it ourselves, you know? So from the editing of the videos, color grading of the videos, learning different doors to do different things. Now I'm Ableton based, but like we went through all the doors trying to figure out what worked for us. You know, like it was such an experimental time. Mm-hmm. And that is how we got that kind of inspiration to be like, you know, it can work. People are looking for something new. They just don't know what it is. Right. So we just have to be the visionaries. If we feel it and we're vibing it, we're doing this for us. This is fulfillment. That's the only reason I'm creating. Yeah, we want people to love the music, but I think of music like therapy. You know, mm-hmm, when I create, and one, that creative process is amazing to me. I just like, you're putting energy into there. And for me, I'm putting a lot of positive energy into that music for it to now hopefully translate to other people. And that was a point proven for us. And from there, that's what's catapulted the creating of music and just trying to now learn other processes. Now I'm to the point where I'm trying to learn to mix because all of those things just creatively affect the sonic. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be in control, you know, like how do we elevate everything?
Whoa. Okay. So I'm curious. So with No One, you had the song, people weren't feeling it, and you knew that there's something there. You guys knew that there's something there. You create this lyric video, you put it up on YouTube, and what, it just starts to get a bunch of views?
Yeah, it just starts to get buzz. Like it was just getting buzz. Like I'm talking about, bro, it was so funny because I was my most motivated at that point in my life when I didn't know a lot. You know, I knew I had no PR. I had no kind of marketing spend. I knew nothing about releasing the music properly.
Right.
But this was something that I had to now kind of try and learn. So I was there trying to find like, okay, how do we get on blogs? How do we get it on magazines? What do we need to do? And this was like, Instagram was like kind of, it wasn't new, but it wasn't what it is now, obviously, right? So even that, like trying to make assets and post on Instagram, how do we make it look like Justin Bieber type quality?
Right.
Without having those funds, right? And that's what we did. So I was like looking into like reaching out to people to try and get the song on different, like I say, magazines, just PR of it. I didn't even
call
it
any
PR
way that time. People can
see any
it.
Way that
right.
I can. Yeah. Go on radio, all these things. We were doing everything for ourselves.
Yeah. Whoa. So like, well, but I mean, how do you start seeing, because I'm sure at that point still, I mean, what was that? 2017, 2016?
Yeah. That would have been about 17. Yeah.
Okay. So there was still millions upon millions of people that are throwing stuff up at YouTube. How do you, was there a moment that you saw it kind of turn? Was it a gradual thing? Was it like we put the song up and overnight it had 500,000 like play? I mean, it has nearly 4 million on Spotify. So like it's doing things. So I was just curious, like, was there, did you see it like well, how is the trajectory?
Interesting story when it comes to that as well. It happened kind of like that. Like it was cool because again, I've never really released an artist song, right? I was doing covers and stuff, which did well, but I never released my own music like that. So it started doing well and we were like, okay, cool, it's doing well. And then all of a sudden it caught on locally. So like all of our friends, all of these like younger people who were listening to, again, people like Justin Bieber, people who they... We had this whole time of the year where nobody in Trinidad is making music.
Right.
And now we are now releasing in that time.
Okay.
So nobody has ever really done pop music like that in Trinidad. So it was new. And all of these radio stations were like loving the song because now you could like, you could link it to these international artists because that's what we were trying to sound like, you know, it was quite Americanized as well, you know, not gonna lie. But we were trying to link into that type of market. And because of that, it just started to bubble. It started to gain more traction. I started to kind of invest a little bit in the marketing spend, which gave it more distance. Mm-hmm. And then from that point in time, Sony came on board. And when Sony came, so that's when it started to like jump like 100,000 a day, 200,000 a day, to where the video got like, it went to like 7 million. And it just, I don't know, it just kind of shows you how playlists and, because a playlist came on board, that kind of just went, may you go up. So then we got all this like Latin American audience listening to No One. Nobody knew who I was, but they knew the song. I didn't even have Spotify. Because you know why? Spotify was not accessible in the Caribbean. It was not available for us to even have it. So in order for me to listen to music on Spotify, I had to get a VPN blocker.
I was going to say, did you have to get a different VPN and pretend VPN like you were like in Canada or something?
Exactly. That was the only way, because I didn't even think about Spotify. I was like thinking about YouTube. YouTube was the only way for me to gauge the success of the song. And then one of my friends was like, bro, you know, this song have real streams on Spotify. And I was like, what? He shows me his Spotify with the VPN blocker, of course.
Sure.
And it's like 300,000 monthly listeners. The song is, bro, I hadn't even have a Spotify on my phone or anything like that.
And That was crazy.
It was crazy. That was crazy for me. Just, I don't know. It's just like, it's just crazy how it could just.
Yeah, it just took off and you hadn't, you couldn't even see like the full scope of it. Yeah, right. Oh, wow.
So it was exciting. It was quite cool. Yeah.
Sure. That's amazing. And then obviously it's validating because it was something that people turned down originally.
Definitely.
And then
definitely
it's
validating. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's okay. We're doing what we're going to do. So once all this starts to go, is that must have changed everything for you? Then are you doing music full time? Are you like, what's like, what kind of came from that?
So at the time I was balancing being in that same band doing cover music. And that was actually after that song started doing really well. And I started like learning how to kind of produce a little bit, learning how to do my own vocals. Cause that was that period of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just figuring out stuff that we had no idea about. That was kind of what stopped me from being in the band because that took up all my time. I was in university studying marine biology. Again, I was in Trinidad. What choice did I have? if I studied music, everybody would tell me, you know, the only thing that you could do from studying music is be a teacher.
Yeah, teach music.
You know what I mean? Like, no belief system, man. And now that I see how important belief system is, I'm like, I try and give as much as that to artists trying, you know, because they just, when we go through challenging moments, you just need somebody to help you get past it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You could either trust the journey and be like, you know what? This is part of my growth. I need to understand whatever I need to understand during this moment to be able to go forward. Mm-hmm. It can't just happen with a smooth sailing journey. It never happens like that, right? And you just need that extra bit of confidence to push yourself beyond that challenging moment. And I think that's what we didn't have, but we had other people who resonated with the frustration of not being able to do what they wanted, be who they wanted. And that's what pushed us. So I was doing music full time. That was in my head what I was doing, even though I was juggling university and stuff like that. Yeah, music.
But you knew that that was the thing.
I knew
it. Yeah.
I knew it from a while before, but it's like, again, confidence, just believing it was the challenge inside. Like, am I really going to be able to live off of making music, boy? Like, believing that part was what took a little bit of time, because it's hard. It's just hard. The opportunities are not there. The tools are not there. We have no studios like that easily accessible. You have no spaces. So how do you now fund having a studio, again, a guitar, buying an interface, your laptop? How do you fund all these things as an artist? You can't, you know? So now I'm buzzing because I get, you know, I really, really appreciate the challenge. I respect the challenge. I'm happy during those challenging moments, but it was tough.
Yeah. Wow. For sure. So what was the next like milestone then for you after the success of that song? Like, how do you get to, then to LA and UK? Like, how do you broaden that? And like, what was that like?
So after I signed to Sony, they flew me out to Sweden. And this was actually when I met my manager today. Okay. I think you might have spoken briefly.
Fabulous and human being.
Again, like fabulous human being. She came in and belief system, man. Belief system like crazy, and that was a lot. That was enough for me to like challenge myself, want to experiment. Okay, how do we change this? How do I learn this? Whatever, and that was our next step. So I was in Sweden by myself in the first winter that I've ever experienced in my life. Right.
Right. You're coming from the Caribbean, and then it's like
humid days.
Yeah. Now it's freezing weather.
You know, living on my own in Sweden for like 3 or 4 months. And
sure.
I organically, now Sony set up all of these meetings and all of these studio sessions with these different producers. But
that's where the pop was coming out. I mean, pop music was massive. And like, you know, the big heavy hitters are riding out of Sweden.
Yeah.
And probably still are. I mean,
for sure. Definitely. Like, and Stockholm to be more specific. So even for me, that was the first time experiencing real industry life. Seeing like, okay, I'm walking on the road, there's a Spotify headquarters there. There are like 10 studios, like proper studios, you know, fully equipped everywhere, right around my doorstep. And I was like, wow, it would be incredible if we had this type of surrounding environment in Trinidad. Because art is so important to inspire people. We need art, you know? But you need to have it set up in order for it to actually work, in order for people to believe that they can be artists and not just have to like do it as a hobby and then kind of settle for what society says you have to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So Sweden was that for me. Sweden was where I really started learning everything, songwriting, just kind of like, I'm always looking at what people are doing. Oh, I knew nothing about EQ compressors. That was so foreign to me. So seeing people use those things and now trying to understand it to apply to myself, that's where I really, really got a lot of that education. And even till today, a lot of great friends still from Sweden who I work with amazingly well because that was my start. Mm-hmm. I had short hair, like totally different person, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to hear about, so how does this, I guess we can move forward quite a bit here. So how does this stage start at the South by Southwest? I watched this killer trailer that you have put together. I don't know if it's out yet, of footage from South by Southwest on that stage. Yeah. So tell me about that. Like, and was that just something that you built because of this genre that you guys have kind of formulated?
So South by Southwest. So I was invited to South by Southwest. I can't exactly, I think it would be 2018 or 19, before the pandemic, for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. And I went there, just me and a guitar, and they put me on the Russian stage, right? So that was fine for me. I didn't even think about that. But what was challenging was all the acts before me sounded totally different. The genres were totally different. Nothing really matched each other. So even though people enjoyed it, it didn't feel as though I got new fans because they didn't come to hear that type of music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So fast forward now to post-pandemic. During the pandemic, I'm in Barbados and I'm invited to South by Southwest again, but it got canceled physically, right? So we're thinking now, okay, well, we have to do this spiritually now. How do we make this make sense? Because we can't just know that people are going to tune off if they haven't come to hear Caribbean type music, right? Then they're going to tune off, especially virtually. So we're like, you know what? Let's try. What about if we try and make a stage for Salt Bae, like a Caribbean stage where it's not necessarily reggae and soca, but it's like artists from the Caribbean who they're doing their versions of whatever genres they want to do. We now house that in one place. Mm-hmm. So we started the ideas wherever. It was very challenging the first year because it was during COVID. So it was like we had to do a lot of random other things to try and make this work. But we flew to Jamaica. And the first year we had Mortimer from Jamaica, Tessellated from Jamaica, Savannah. We had myself and Kalia, I think. I think that's all we had. Mm-hmm. And we did it virtually. And it was such a successful show virtually that South by Southwest gave us our physical venue. And we became the first Caribbean stage at South by in Texas.
That's so huge.
Blessings, bro. Blessings, bro. Yeah, it was energizing, honestly. And now this, when was it? In March, I believe. Yeah, March. Mm-hmm. We took 30 people from the Caribbean to Texas, got all the visas, you know, got the bands there. It was a challenge, man. But we did it. You know, Freetown Collective was there. Jimmy October from Trinidad was there. Jazz Elise from Jamaica, Tessellated. Nyla Blackman was there. And we had the night packed out. It was at the Flamingo Cantina. Uh-huh. And people were just there. It was just a vibe throughout. Because again, like this was different for South Bae because we brought a stage. It wasn't just individual acts. This was like a movement. We flew together. You know what I mean?
Like
Yeah.
It wasn't everyone didn't meet up in Austin, right?
We flew together. So all of the Trini acts met at the airport, you know, we met the Jamaicans in Miami, flew to Texas. That was a whole nightmare by itself because
that's right.
It was like, it was a lot, you know, people missed flights and stuff, but we got
then you were all on the same flight at one point.
Yeah. Supposed to be all on the same flight, but like the Trinis were on the same flight. The Jamaicans were on the same flight.
Okay.
And then
it wasn't like you guys took over the whole plane. Like that's what I'm expecting. No. Like you get on Southwest Airlines and it's like your guys' whole stage and everything. Yeah. That would have been awesome.
That was actually supposed to be the case, but because some of the guys, it was the airport in Miami was crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, like it was so packed in Miami is usually crazy generally. And because of South by Southwest, everybody's flying in now for this. Mm-hmm. So people were just missing flights all throughout the airport. So like we were so lucky to even the way that it panned out, man, it panned out so perfectly, but we were lucky to all get to South by in time. We stayed in the same place, like in this cool like venue where there were trailers everywhere. Like it was dope. You know, then we all met up, we had the venue throughout the whole day. So it was a movement, you know, it was really a movement. And I think that spoke for itself in terms of we collaborated to make this thing happen. This was all about collaboration. And it just kind of showed us how strength in numbers, you know, you can try and do this as an individual, but if you do this as a movement, it's going to make more noise. Mm-hmm. And it did make noise and it gave us all these new ideas for the next one to come. So the next South by is going to be epic because, again, we'll have more resources. We'll have more experience. You know, like we believe more in ourselves because we pulled this off. So many cards were against us. You know, nobody thought we could pull this off because of the visa situation in Trinidad and Jamaica. It's a nightmare. It is so difficult to get a visa as a Caribbean person to go to the U.S. to perform. And I'm talking about this is just a visitor's visa because we're not going to make money. This is South by. This is industry, right? Mm-hmm. We had to pay to get ourselves there and we don't get paid to play. So
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So it's not like, I mean, I'm sure the bigger artists come in like, Lizzo was there.
Yeah, they got a draw, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. But the other emerging artists, which is the majority of, which is what South by is really for.
Yeah, it's like a showcase. Showcase,
exactly. So we had to pay for our flights. We had to pay for the bands. We had to pay to rehearse everything. Then the visas, then to fly, then to up the stay. It was a lot. But it panned out and I think it really showed people that we could do this from the Caribbean. Even though it is challenging, you could do this. It opened a lot of conversations with South by, with Spotify in terms of the way that genres are listed. Because again, like me as a Trinbagonian artist, I had to click reggae before I could click Caribbean.
Right.
Yeah. Or I had to click pop.
Even though you're not like a reggae artist. Not at all.
At all. I have like, I probably might have like little influences here and there, but I am by no means a reggae artist.
Yeah, even the new one that you put out, or the most recent one, doesn't sound anything like a...
Exactly.
Has more of an, like an R&B vibe than a...
and then with like the dancehall calypso drums.
Right.
And, yeah.
More than like, reggae at all. Yeah, sure.
Definitely. So like we challenged all of those things and we're like, how do we now accurately allow people to identify with something so that now listeners could find accurately what they want to listen to? Because if you're not going to find, I'm not a reggae artist, so it doesn't make any sense. But again, it's not that people do this out of malice or bad intent. It's just that the conversation has never been, the conversation just didn't happen.
Right.
And now, yeah, that's it. So once we started having those conversations, the openness, you know, so big up to even South by Southwest for being so open to embrace the Caribbean stage, to embrace change in the genre. They don't have to do that. You know, big up to Spotify, all of them, because it's going to be something that obviously will take time, but it's happening slowly but surely, you know?
Yeah, that's so cool. And like, and just from the trailer video I watched, I mean, that club is packed.
Right, right.
I mean, it is packed with people. And I was wondering if maybe you guys were even nervous, like, okay, you're coming, you're spending all this money, you're building the stage, you've got the venue, you've got the stuff going for South By, but is anyone going to come, right? I mean, like, South by Southwest is insane. There's stuff happening all over. There's big artists. There's waitings, like lines to get in to see certain people. And then you've got this new thing that maybe people aren't aware of. And is it going to be an empty bar? But obviously it wasn't. But like, was that a worry
of yours? Bro. You hit the nail on the head with that one. It was a worry for all of us. Like, I mean, we couldn't really let it concern us too much because there was so much going on that we couldn't even think of, like, we couldn't even think about trying to like go on the road and promote the show. It was beyond us. Like it was too much going on at the time, but it just kind of did its thing. And I think South By pushed it out to their contacts. So we didn't even have to really promote it beyond what we did. You know, the Island Wave is very new, still very new. So at the time it's like the following is not huge. So how do we now get that distance in terms of marketing reach? But we didn't have to do anything. So all the artists, I think, individually pull their people. You know, Nyla has a great following over there. Freetown Collective has a great following over there.
Okay. I talk about so it was more, fans. Yeah. So it's like all the artists letting everyone know, hey, we're playing this venue.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
Everyone kind of coming together for this one experience.
And everybody stayed for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like people afterwards buzzing like, yo, you guys want a new sound. And because I'm like, I'm playing rock and calypso and stuff like.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I'm really experimenting, you know, so it's something I know people just haven't really heard before and is a risk, but I was vibing it. So I'm sure people vibe it. Once I'm vibing on stage and the message is good enough, I think it's solid. And yeah, it just worked, bro.
It was cool, man. Just watching that video. Like there's a guy in the front. He's got a Trinidad flag. I got a flag. He's like, you know, it's just like, yeah, I was like
energy.
The energy was insane. If you told me that was shot in Austin, Texas, I would have been like, yeah, right. Like, there's no way. But like,
and people from everywhere.
Yeah, it
Africa,
was
Africa, US, everywhere. Yeah,
it's a diverse room, and but just like it was such a cool little like taste of what that stage brought. At least in that little clip that I watched, it was like a minute long clip.
Right, right. Yeah. The Tree Law. Yeah, man. It was a vibe. We had a reggae recipe. Ras Kwami, who is on Capital Extra, he was our host and our like after party DJ. So all of those little things. Now, like we had a good group of people to really show this off as like a new thing, you know, because there are Caribbean things happening all the time. You know, there are people who from the Caribbean who went to South By before, but again, it's no movement, and that was the difference here, I really think.
For sure, you know? Man. I mean, it's so cool. So cool. So you are in Barbados now. The most recent song you put out, it was Island Guile. And you have a video for that song. And from what I was mentioned, and I don't know if we can even talk about this, you're shooting a video. So so you have new music coming out? Because that's the newest one, right?
Yeah. So Island Guile is the newest one. And well, the most recent one that pulled. And I've been working on since my last show at the Peppermint Club. I've been working on like songs that I've been working on. I've reproduced even beyond to
Exciting.
Yeah, because again, like more control over the sound, more understanding of things. So we came to Barbados. I met up with some guys that I've worked on, even with the Island Girl video. And they heard the new music, which they've heard the older versions too. And that just got them started. So we came here for a different purpose, and we are now ended up shooting a music video tomorrow.
That's insane. You know what I mean? That's so cool.
Yeah. So I can't wait for you to hear that song, because it's a really important song. It feels great, man. It's called Breathe. Just to give you a little bit of, yeah, it's called Breathe.
Okay.
But it's gonna be insane. I'm really, really excited for y'all to hear it. But Island Girl was the last one, and that song was just about, I just wanted that to feel nostalgic and light, you know, and just something that appreciated our women in the West Indies, man. You know, because I feel like they don't get enough appreciation sometimes. And us as men, we have to change the way that we appreciate our women in the West Indies, because it's very different to the US, to the UK. You know, women feel as though they don't have the same opportunities still in the Caribbean, especially in the creative fields. You know, being artists and stuff, it's not the same. And it wasn't a deep song, really and truly, because again, I just wanted it to feel light. But that's what that song really was, appreciation for our people, you know? And I was in Barbados when I actually wrote that song, flew to Trinidad to work with Tano and in Trinidad, yeah. And yeah, that's how Island Girl came about. And we flew in all these people from the team, the guys who are going to be shooting the music video tomorrow, they flew in from Barbados, and they're epic. They're Caribbean FPV, and they do all the FPV drone stuff. They had some of the best I've ever met, bro. Like, they build their own drones, and they're just great people. You know, we flew the stylist in from Jamaica. She's actually Trini, but she lives in Jamaica. She styles like Protege, Mortimer, Leela, all these guys up there. She flew in. The director from Trinidad flew in from Atlanta. He's studying at Atlanta. So we had a cool team of people in Trinidad, you know, shooting on the beach. That was the first time I was back since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It was a special moment, you know?
That's very cool.
Still
doing
kind of COVID. Yeah, it was cool. It was so cool.
So awesome. Well, I cannot wait to hear the Breathe, as you said, is a new one. I can't wait to hear that song. Yeah. I love what you're doing.
Thank you, bro.
I'm so happy for you. And with Island Wave and happening again at this upcoming or the next 23 South by Southwest, right?
Blessings, my bro. Gotta be there.
Yeah. No, dude. I'm in Nashville. Fingers crossed. Close-ish. I can drive there.
Amazing.
I'm from California, really cool. San Diego originally. So like that was quite a trek, but this is like, you know, a day drive.
Yeah. Got you.
But I love what you're doing. I have one more question. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Okay. I would say in this day and age of music, try and learn as much as you can creatively, because it will allow you to express yourself how you want. And it will give you a better understanding to be able to guide yourself better, you know, because there's nothing worse than when people take advantage of you not knowing something. You know, I've experienced that, you know, people belittling your ideas and that kind of stuff. And it's just not fun, but blessing in disguise. So I would say, dog, belief system, have people around you who believe in you, who believe in the sound and push you forward. That's all you need around you. And yeah, just do the thing. Nobody could tell you that you can't. That's the best advice I could give, because that's what I would have wanted to hear, you know?